You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
It is me.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 26th of August. I'm speaking from the future in September, that's why it's throwing me off as I look at the calendar. To the 1st of September, with multiple exceptions, which we will get to as we go through.
Catching up. Catching up to that week. That's what we're doing.
We're all catching up to that week. But we begin in that week with Wacky TV Na Na Na, second season, episode 21, Blaze On Macho Dragon, in which Tatsumi Fujinami mistakes the Cyclops for, I can't remember his real name, it's Super Strong Machine is his gimmick name.
They both wear the same kind of like, what do you call that, one strap leotard thing? Is that,
Junji Hirata is your man. I think he just retired. Yes, he had his like retirement thing, I think, last year in New Japan. Yeah.
That's probably why he was so shocked to see him here at this castle.
Well, back for one last job, huh?
I like the fact that the crew are initially like, dude, that's not him. It's like, wait, is he going to wrestle him? Oh, yeah, it's totally him. You should go get him.
And the Cyclops is like, look, I'm clearly not him because normally he's with his manager. And this is clearly not his manager.
I think AD is kind of warming up. He's doing the old, like, the fisticuffs coming. Come on, I'll take you on.
Yeah, and so he does some macho calisthenics. The thing I'm trying to pronounce and getting wrong. I'm not going to struggle to say it any further. Which involves him doing... what's those that maneuver called when you arch using your head?
Like he's on his feet and his head, like, bending like a bow backwards kind of thing. I know the fucking, literally watched the episode on it. So
it's not a bridge technically, is it? It's a different.
Like if it's not a bridge, it's probably like a pun similar to the thing. Cause basically he's doing it on the roof of the castle in order to gain the power of the arches. What those little arches are on like the end of the castle.
Yeah, they're the fish things. Dragon Gate have like a gimmick of people who do that. That's their gimmick, is being those fish statues. And they do that pose. Ironically, Dragon Gate is where Junji Hirata's son wrestles. Yeah, so that powers him up enough to become, and they turn their backs for a second, and then all of a sudden he's the same size as the two giants are now.
Wow.
What a so now they're really trying to convince him that, please do not wrestle us.
But yeah, he appears to be having none of it, and next week he will wrestle them. He also appears to be all oiled up now as well. Now he's grown big too.
It's quite detailed, yeah. It's either got like a stretch of Armstrong or something, and then it's animated the head on top. He's using the texture of bananas for the production of dudes for their characters.
Yeah. So you might as well get the texture of oiled up correct.
It's so plasticky though, it must be an action figure that they're taking a reference from. Those things in the roof are Shechi Hokos, and it's an animal with the head of a tiger and the body of a carp. Not just fish.
Okay.
The mighty Chachihoko.
He does comment on that these ones are particularly good, and he mentions another castle that has particularly nice ones as well. He's keeping the tourism. Yeah, he's keeping the tourism thing going, which is nice.
Chachihoko boy is the guy who's got the Chachihoko gimmick in Dragon Gate. Also known as Chachihoko Machine and Chachihoko Machine 2.
Wait, how can you be your own sequel?
I think because sometimes somebody else has been... Yeah, there's four different people have been the Shashihoko machine gimmick.
All right.
Okay. Does he do the pose? Does he just do that, like, you know, posing like the Shashihoko fish tiger thing on the turnbuckle? Because if not, you're missing a trick.
I figured it was like a backbreaker thing where he poses the other wrestler in that position.
That's keep the gimmick going, feed it into everything. Stay on brand, that's what I say.
I think they do pose.
I mean, that's still probably rad to the scene.
For all the Dragon Gate that I've seen, I don't think I've ever seen him in a match. At least not as Shachihoko Boy. I think I've seen him in the other gimmick, Shisa Boy. Where he's dressed up as a different statue.
Yeah. I suppose you kind of could bend your opponent down with their, like, their, like, bend them with a head face, with a head kind of a 90 degree angle to the rest of their body, but going the wrong way. that could be a pretty painful maneuver.
Wait, does it say that he's got the Shachihoko clutch?
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That sounds right.
He's bending them back. Yeah, that makes more sense. That's probably a lot easier to do without just destroying your opponent's spine accidentally.
Yeah.
I'll allow the listener to investigate further. See if there's like a video of top 28 moves of Shachihoko Boy.
Top 10 of castle based moves,
that
yeah.
Sort of thing, yes.
The Walls of Jericho. That's more of a city than a castle, but it could fit in.
It's a fortification, it's fine.
I haven't been mentioned.
Not being able to escape Jericho on Twitter today with all those memes.
Oh, but it's a crime of the century, Brian.
Yeah, well, that was before the crime of the century, with him spotting the bubbly backstage was the first set of memes, and then the second's been him managing to have the belt stolen out of his hired limo. Well, yeah, it's, yeah. Reality is better than fiction sometimes. I'm sure they'll manage to get the most out of that on the show. Anyway, talking of shows, we've now got three episodes of The Demon Girl Next Door. The first two that Dwayne has watched, and I've carried on not catching up. So, Dwayne, tell us about episode 5, A Town Full of Traps. The demon on the brink awakens a new ability.
I'll do a quick run by. It's basically like she's going to use some of the money. The other magical girl says, I don't want to take the money off you all in one. She wants to kind of draw her out. It's like, I'm fine with a 50 yen a day deal. And she was like, okay, so I'm going to spend this money on my sister before, you know, the bad luck curse takes it away from me. And her sister constantly wants to buy equipment to help out her older sister, but, there's this cute little camera she wants. So she manages to convince her to get the camera, and they take a picture of the two friends together. And obviously she has to, Momo comes with her, and it's like, who's that girl that's with you? That's my best friend. It's like, play along, you know? So that was pretty fun. Like a kind of thing. It was like, we're actually deadly enemies, but you have to pretend to be my friend when actually it's clear they're best friends at this stage. But it is a digital camera and she doesn't understand this digital stuff. So, Momo's going to lend her an old laptop, but she has to get it home safely from school and not get it destroyed, hit by a ball, covered in water, like very specific instructions. So it's like a constant hazard of trying to get the laptop home.
Yep. Don't feed it at midnight. Don't get it wet. Standard rules.
And it's like she thought she bypasses all the traps from school and everything, but there was that big dog that's on the way home that barks at her, and she's like, oh, I got to get past this dog. She makes her new move, the crisis management transformation, where she turns into a far too skimpy revealing outfit and she's freaking out, and the neighbor takes the dog out for a walk. It's just like, oh, hello there, young girl. Oh, my goodness. Keep on walking. And she's like, I can't walk around the neighborhood like this. The laptop gets dropped anyway, but it was packed extra carefully because you won't figure it would. That's the episode. Okay, next one. I feel like in the last episode, she was fed, Shamiko was fed like a weird ball by one of the occult club guys. It's like, here, I'm experimenting on you. I mean, I want you to try this candy that I made. So in this episode, the demon Lilith contacts her saying, it's like, this is episode 6, Curds of the Future, the heavy roller won't stop. Lilith says, hey, we can totally Inception your enemy. So now you have the power to go into her dream and convince her to do a thing. She goes into her dream and it's like a child version of her that's seen some shit as a magical girl, clearly. But she basically goes in, cleans up her mind and makes her feel much better. Except she also gets a cold because she did have some effect on messing with her dreams. That's where she got the Momo actually collapsed at one stage and got a little, just a tiny cut on the back of her hand, and she put a plaster on it, but she dabbed it up with the with a cloth, invited her over to her house for dinner at one stage, that kind of thing. But you know, when she went home, jammed the idol in the gym bag with the cloth, and it's like, ah, oh, yes, that's enough blood to allow it to talk now. And also it broke the seal on her house. There was apparently a seal on the her front door. It was just some random junk that looks like it was taped to the door. It's like, yes, it was preventing me, a magical girl, from finding you. But now that it's broken by you inviting me to your house for dinner, like also, a vampire, yeah, reverse vampire situation, basically.
Also, look at that junk letters into the door. It was just a warning has been taken down.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically like, now magical girls will be able to find you, so we need to train you up. And that's where we brought into the last one and the new magical girl catch up. We're on episode 8 now.
Yeah, the cursed fruit, beware the sour mikan. So the other magical girl has been called in by Momo, and she's getting suspicious of this, mascot character.
Well, the mascot's behaving very suspiciously.
And then discovers that it's, Yuko, and that she's a demon, and then does she turn into a crisis management form again here? Yes.
She panics because your one said is like, hey, I'm actually a magical girl. I'm looking for a demon or something. I gotta beat him up. And then she pulls her down into an alley and starts saying stuff like, take off your clothes. And it's like, hey, take them off. Cause like people will get the wrong idea about what's happening right now. It was like, this is weird. So obviously your one thought she was about to get her head kicked in. So went into the crisis management form, which hasn't really done anything for her yet, I don't think.
We're doing an explanation of it, at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
It does have some use.
Apparently.
Apparently, yes. A tiny bit of use. But yeah, apparently she's been brought here to help with Yuko's training. But then the problem is she's got a curse on her. That, seems to just, well, it currently manifests as like a terrible wind starts blowing whenever she gets flustered, and she gets flustered when people compliment her.
Mm.
And so we go through this long sequence where Momo and Yuko are like particularly Yuko are trying to compliment her without her realizing it, so it won't activate the curse.
Yeah, I did like, Yuko's kind of, I'm actually a demon queen and it's good that you've come here because now I'll be able to feast on your blood, but it accidentally came across as a compliment.
Yes.
Just like, God damn it, you can't win.
And then Momo's now learned about this crisis management form after, we learned, yeah, she's like, she had to, like, Mikan had to cover Yuko up because she was naked, and Yuko's like, I wasn't naked, I was half naked.
It's completely different. It's legally distinct.
Momo wants to see this as well. And, how do they end up getting it to
appear? Cause they're trying to get her to manifest it, and she can't do it unless she actually is having a crisis, basically. She threatens her in some regard. Was like, now I'm gonna hit you, or something. What was it? I can't remember how she manages to manifest it, but it was like a threat of.
I was multitasking, yeah. And this wasn't getting paid attention to.
I watched too many episodes. That's my excuse.
Anyway, yeah, she does eventually transform, and then she asks Lilith, "Why on earth does it look like this in the first place?" Also, in the first half, though, there was the joke that they accidentally threw Lilith away, thinking she was a bottle which needed to be recycled. That was how the first half ended. We get like a bit of information about the crisis management form. So you're slightly physically better. You're slightly more intelligent. But UK's like, I can't wear this to school. I can't do gym class in this outfit. I can't do exams in this outfit. But then we also learn that apparently, magical girls, if they use all their magic power up, or if they have all their magic power drained, or is this what causes the crisis? I think this is what causes the crisis, isn't it? Is her learning this. So, yeah, if she drains all of Momo's power, then Momo's soul will just evaporate into the air, and she'll lose her physical form. She won't die.
Yeah, the reason why Momo was so weakened in the first place is because she lost a tiny amount of blood, which apparently is like a big fucking deal, because it's part of her essence, part of her magical ability, and it's been reduced significantly.
Yes, I think that's what causes the crisis. That's where she starts panicking that she's going to kill her best friend.
At this stage, Momo has also convinced Yuko to, it's like, hey, you should help me defend the city from threats and shit. And it's like, well, I'm an evil demon lady. Why would I do that? And it's like, oh, you steal my blood when I'm down and sick, when you owe me money. That doesn't seem very honorable to me. And it's like, oh, fuck. Oh, okay. I guess I'll help you defend the town then. Which I was just like, that's a great bit where it's just, the kid is apparently evil, but is actually just too nice to be evil.
Yes.
It's good.
Based on next week's episode title, I assume that she is going to try and figure out how to wear the crisis management form into school, because it's called Final Exams. Today I'm one of those brainy demons.
To increase her test scores very slightly.
Yes,
yeah.
That was established at the end of this episode.
Hmm.
I shall try and pay more attention to it next week. Meanwhile, something I did pay attention to, Dr. Stone, episode 9, Let There Be the Light of Science.
Let there be Gen Asagiri.
Yes, Mom's home. So, this we are introduced in the flesh to Gen Asagiri, the author of the book that Senku was dismissing in a flashback a few episodes ago. And he has apparently been sent by Tsukasa to spy on the village of primitives to see what they're up to. But then he discovers, oh, Senku's alive, and he's got a bunch of the natives working for him to make iron.
So he's hedging his bets now. I could go back to Tsukasa and say, you're alive, and you come here and I'll kill you. Or I can just go back and say you're dead, and go on with you dudes, and eat some ramen and stuff, and,
He does mention cola in this episode, which...
He does mention cola, because, things here could be good, but it's a lot of hard work. Whereas Tsukasa, you get all the ladies, they're going to be in a hot spring, and it's really easy. But they haven't got, electricity and all stuff. Or cola.
Yeah, I do like how he's, almost accident. It's like he's suddenly roped into pumping the blowers on the...
Well, yeah, he showed up to the ramen party with everyone else. It's like, hey, is that one of your villagers? No. Is he one of your friends? No. That's an invader. Yeah. Let's get him. And so he still has to pay back the ramen he had by working the bells.
Yeah. And then Kaku is just like completely bemused by it. It's like, he's saying words, but he doesn't mean them. He's some kind of liar.
That's a new invention now, yeah.
Yeah. His harem thought isn't... A thought, it's said out loud, because then Suika comes up to it and asks him what a harem is.
Yeah.
But tell you when you're older. I just like how quickly he sort of dismantles, he's got a very threatening, sinister character, and Senku was just sort of wowing him with what he's doing. So, you missed some iron, very, very good. What are you going to make? Swords? Stone tools? No, I'm going to make a generator. What?
Yeah, I knew he was going to go a step up, and I was like, he's at least making guns out of this. He's like, nope, we got electricity now.
I think that's another key thing to making, a turn to him is that, this guy is not planning on going to war with Tsukasa in the normal sense. He's got much more ambitions than that.
He appears to be a complete asshole, just to add to the pile, but it's like, yeah, but it's an asshole on our side, so that's good?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like Sean Senku's thing of like, I'm just going to revive, I'm going to save everyone that I possibly can, because like good and bad makes the society.
Yeah, as well, like Senku, he's smart, but obviously he can't do it all. So he's kind of like meeting or reviving or encountering people who are like the best in their field at this one thing. So you got Taiju, who's like, he's, you know, a super energetic guy with a lot of stamina. It's got Kohaku, who has, like, no fun. She's, like, you know, great eyesight. She's very athletic. And then you got Gena Sugiri, who's just great at fucking, he's going to be a social engineering dude. and just had him better at manipulate people and to get him to do what he wants him to do, which is, you know, what he needs to do when he's starting up, getting the guys in to pump iron for him, literally.
Like, it's so often when you see the genius character is automatically the villain, because, you know, it's like, smart is bad, but this guy, like, your one keeps commenting on, keeps making horrible faces and having evil plans, but it's kind of like he understands that he does need other people. Which makes him like not sympathetic or anything, but at least makes him relatable, understandable, and rootable as a main character.
But yeah, the thing it made me think about watching it this week was how Ice Shield 21 has, like, I can't remember even the guy's name, the milquetoast hero guy is basically there as delivery mechanism for all the other more weird characters, whereas this doesn't have the milquetoast at all, and it has multiple Harumas.
Also, speaking of Ice Shield 21, got a little cameo from Kurita, when they're talking about having to, like, just the Wheel of Pain.
Oh, yeah. dear.
So he saves them, Gen saves them from Magma and his gang, because they think that they've summoned the anger of the heavens when it starts thundering.
See, I like the fact it's like, now all we need is a lightning storm, and then there's a lightning storm. It's like, ah, fuck, that's too quick. We're not ready.
Yes, because they need lightning. They're going to use lightning to make a big old magnet. We need a super strong magnet. Yes, and he manages to see off Magma and his gang by mere sleight of hand, making it look like he can produce flowers from nowhere. The flowers that he'd previously told Suika to go fetch him.
I loved the way they implement it. I've seen the comic, obviously, but it just goes, okay, watch my hands close. This goes, boop, and it puts the little xylophone sound effect. This goes, this cut out, it's like, brook, like, whoa. It's like a fun Hanna-Barbera shit going on, but it really fits in.
And the lads on the opposite side of the bridge going like, so wait, he can't see them from that angle? It's like, nah, this guy's a fucking huckster, all right? He's good.
They've got the copper wire, they've got the iron, they've got it all wrapped up, they need something to attract the lightning, and so they have to, Kohaku has to fight Kinro to get his spear off him, because he doesn't want to give up his nice gold spear.
So you do like it. No.
they have to lacquer everything as well to make it safe, don't they? Because that's the thing after the end, is that Senku's had an allergic reaction to the lacquer.
Yeah, I do like the way that went on for ages, and then it's like, Senku, I gotta ask, because I was like, yeah, please ask him, because I'm also wondering what's going on with his fucking face.
And then, yes, they batter out two massive sheets of copper, they got the magnets. And now they have a hand crank electrical generator. And they need two people who can work perfectly in time.
Two stout men to work the bellows. It's like,
the promise of electroplating, their spears.
You have, gold spears and silver spears, like as many as you want, temptation to lie. Oh, wow, okay. Well, cranking then. It's like, again, it's dubious. Are you actually making electricity here? Because it seems like it's just like two dopes just turning a big wheel. It's like, well, step into my office and I'll show you just what we're making here. And, what's it, like, you know, like a filament out of bamboo and, just like, push two wires together, and then they said, for the first time in like 3,700 years, we got electric, like, shining on the planet once more. And I suppose we're exaggerating for dramatic effect. This light can be seen for miles around, but I don't know, maybe it could be that bright. I'm not sure how those filaments work or not. I think the idea is that they burn really bright, but they burn really fast. Really quickly.
Well, I mean, like, it would be like they burn quite bright. Think about like a light bulb and an old fashioned one. You know how fucking bright those things glow. And a less refined one of those glows like crazy bright. And also, in comparison, there is no, besides the stars and everything, there's no nighttime light in this world. So it would be bright in comparison to what they're used to as night. I don't think you'd see it from space. That's just to show it's like, oh, we're getting there, man.
They have to science consultant, I presume everything is completely accurate.
Except for what they have to leave out, so you don't try it at home. Please don't try it at home.
Also, petrification, you know, don't go around pouring the acid on statues you see in the park or something like that. They will not come back to life.
Well, yes, we'll find out in the most recent chapter of the comic where they find a statue of somebody they weren't expecting. Deal with that later. We end with this, the light glowing into the night sky and again looking suitably impressed that, Senku's come this far.
My god, maybe he can do it. Maybe he can do it.
Yeah. I love this show. It's great.
I
don't think I'd ever picked up just from reading the comic, but how the crack in Gen's face is like a grin. Like half a grin.
Yeah, I already noticed in the thumbnail for the episode here, it just fits right into that little groove. But again, maybe it's looking more sinister. Oh, this guy's bad news. But he's this guy's like a fucking doofus, like all the rest of them. But he's very good at manipulating people and getting into their heads.
Yeah.
He has useful skills for making a society. Yeah.
But he's also a doofus.
Yes, like everyone else in society.
But yeah, he's good thinking on his feet as well. We'll
learn.
Which I guess is from his performing aspect, being this teenage celebrity wizard psychic. Next up on the list is Fruits Basket. I remembered it this week, episode 32, because I was happy.
Oh, is that why you remembered it? Because you were happy. Okay, well, good for you. And in kind of stark difference to sort of more whimsical and, kind of more humorous Hanajime episode. This is like going into the in-depth, right into the backstory. And it's all pretty much serious business end to end. See Hanajima, you know, she might have got a gloomy outlook on life. Well, not like gloomy, just kind of, that's a kind of goth kind of aura around her. Probably because she was bullied for fucking in school, like for nearly all of her childhood.
Man, that's a rough watch if you ever had like bullying in school. That was a little close for comfort, I gotta say. Yeah. Not the specific things of I have clearly, like, it's not even a euphemism or like it's like, oh, people think she has. It's like, no, she straight up has psychic powers to some extent.
Yeah. Well, you think, well, that's kind of weird, but then you forget this is a show that
people turn into animals. That's weirder than psychic waves. Yeah.
This probably happens. Yeah. But she's basically going up to get on in school, but getting bullied all the time. And, often her powers, like, turning against them. And she just kind of lashes out psychically and, almost kills the boy. And she just kind of becomes afraid of herself and what she can do. And she's willing
to take the punishment of bullying and not tell the parents she's being bullied because she feels like she deserves it. She can't be arrested for this psychic crime, so she feels like, okay, I'll just take the bullying. That'll be my punishment. I'll just wear black all the time. And it kind of like, it more so informed her personality growing up that she became very dour and everything, became very withdrawn.
Yeah, she tried to seal herself away from people, you know, don't get too close to them. And her repetition follows her like up into junior high school or whatever like that.
And well, they actually move schools, I think.
They move schools like, as well. So bad. Well, by that stage, she has a reputation and people are more often just kind of staying away from her because they actually are frightened of her as well.
I think the reason that they moved schools was some of the rough girls were like burning her arm to try and get her, force her to use psychic powers. And then she got accused of, oh, she was playing with matches and she actually nearly burnt one of them. And so it was like, okay, we're going to move fucking schools, because this, like, her, she got the family at home, and she obviously her parents and her granny and her brother especially really care about her. But it was just like really rough to see that she's not like going to that support network that she has when she's clearly suffering so badly in school.
Yeah. But she moves to the school that Toru and Uo-chan attend, and she gets pally with them. What more so they get pally with her, because you see she's obviously sitting by herself, but she's new and they want to talk to her, and they're also two weirdos, and it's like, you guys get called weirdos a lot. Yes, everybody calls us weirdos, but we're best friends. You can be our best friend too.
Yeah, it was like, hey, new kid, sit down with us. And it's like, yeah, but you're like weirdly like informal and apologetic constantly, and you're like a delinquent clearly. It's like, why you want to hang out with me? It's like, fuck it.
Dude, we got food. It's lunchtime. We want to get to know you. Just sit down already.
Yeah. Mm.
Hmm. But the same thing kind of happens again. Some girls approach him and are like, oh, Hanajimus, I heard in your last school, is it true you always killed a boy of us? You know, it's happening again. And then, she kind of like gets pushed a little bit too far. Like the voices keep coming back into her head. And then, she kind of absentmindedly or accidentally just, puts some kind of psychic wound upon one of the girls, and she kind of collapses down on the floor, and it's like,
she just like gets a headache. It's nothing as bad as like that other time that she keeps blaming herself for, but yeah.
Yeah. She runs off up the stairs and is like, stay away from me. Don't go near me. But Toru was like, no, I can't stay away from you because we're so close. See, we're touching hands right now.
Yeah. And at that stage, they'd hung out like a bunch as friends, and she thought maybe it was like she'd gotten the hope back. It's like, maybe I can be normal. And then this kind of thing was like a breaking point for her, thinking she couldn't.
Hmm. But, it's kind of the advice of her little brother Megumi, who was actually wise beyond his years, even from last episode. He's always like 5 minutes, but it's like, do you think this is what life is all about? Is just to live and to be punished, or to punish or be punished? Is that, I think, all this people are there for? No, people are there, like, you know, they fuck up, but they're there to live and do other things as well. Is that what you want for yourself? Because you won't see anything else besides that if you just see yourself off all the time.
Mm.
But then, like, you know, you got these two who are coming now, and they're really making an effort to reach out to them and saying, oh, I want to hang out. That would be really nice, actually. I want to be friends. Yeah. That's really sweet.
Mm, it's a very nice scene. And, like, it kind of goes from her brother, like, being, like, this still creepy kid following his sister around, like, doting on his sister, and learning about curses. Because it's like Granny said, it might help control our evil powers. And the thing like that becomes like a center point of her change is like back when she was still in an older school and being bullied and everything. He said it's like, okay, I'm just going to say, instead of a curse, he's going to say a prayer, where he's like, I wish that in this whole wide world, there's got to be people who would be your friend. And I hope they get here soon. It was basically like the extent of his prayer, and it seemed to be kind of answered. So maybe that's the start of his curses working. I don't know. But, it kind of cuts to them, like, later in the park meeting, Toru and herself and the brother, and they're still wearing black. It's like, hey, how come you're still wearing black? And she's like,
that's cool. Makes
me feel good now. You know, it weirdly is a comfort for her rather than a thing she inflicted on herself as punishment.
Yeah. And it's also like going back to these places, you know, like going back to that park, and she's able to, you know, just because she has friends with her down and she feels safe and confident that she can keep, kind of shut the voices out at will and doesn't letting them in. And then like that road back from school, which used to be so lonely and sad for her, now just like a few more extra shadows just standing there alongside me. So it doesn't feel so crushingly lonely anymore.
Mm. Really, really nice episode. Really. Like, even though it's talking about like superpowers and everything, it's really nice handling of like bullying and how the connections that you make.
Yeah.
That you don't deserve suffering as a person. No one does. Yeah.
It's also shown too that, a lot of the kind of sadness, the best sadness we've seen in the show so far, have mostly been born from like, sort of familial strife.
Infamiliar strife and self-loathing to some extent. Yeah.
But like Hanajima, she has like, you know, a wonderful family, like supportive parents who are understanding of her. They don't like, think of her as some kind of devil child because of her gift.
Yeah. They think about, they move schools because of how much they care about their daughter.
Yeah, but even
I was really worried it was going to be the thing where she could read her father's mind as he's trying to comfort her. It's like, I'm sick of this fucking kid or something like that. But that was never the case. It was always like entirely supportive. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have those people in your life and you need to kind of recognize them and you need to put yourself out there to find new people like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like even when you have this, that sort of like happy kind of support network, it can still be pretty tough because people can be assholes sometimes. But not everybody is an asshole. And this, when you find those people and you can share these things with them and go through it with them as well, it makes it just that little bit easier. And things won't seem so bad. Even if you do have mind power that could blow up someone's head, if you want to, but you choose not to because
she's got a handle on it now. She can just make them suffer when she wants to know.
Oh, just a reputation is all she needs now.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't need to do nothing. Yeah. So it's nice. So, about the happier things, maybe, because, you know, I do love Panna and Duo-chan, and, like, they're fine now, but I don't let's see them cry.
Yeah, seeing their trauma they're was the
strong
bad,
ones. They're the strong ones.
I think seeing the kind of trauma that they came from was pretty bad, but the fact that you know that they come out of it, you know that there's a happy ending to this because we've seen this is a flashback and we've seen the characters are fine in the modern day. So yeah, it's nice to it works well, I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Then we've got Fire Force Episode 8, Infernal Insects. In which we, if you pay attention to voices, you know who the bad guy is pretty much.
Yes. Oh, man.
I mean, like, they're obviously trying to do the thing where he has very much so one inflection, but yeah. So they were hoping that the inflection would be the disguise, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the time, he's always shouting.
Yeah. So, yeah. Exactly.
Him not shouting would be actually a good disguise. But yeah, I think it's kind of fairly obvious who it is fairly early on. But the boys don't know that yet, but do have an idea of what happened because they have sharing information and intel with the 5th Brigade and saying, well, a lot of these incidents happen with infernals are possibly made artificially. No such mixed in with their makeup, we have traces of some kind of insect DNA in there as well. Also, a lot of these incidents are happening around places where there was a fire or an infernal had appeared already, where people now be closed off to the public. So it's probably somebody within the fire force
who has access to like not a fire scene. I don't know really what you call the scene of a fire, but yeah.
A fire scene is
that the right term? It sounds like scene of a crime. It didn't sound like the right terminology.
Well. Who knows? Was it an accident or was it a crime? That's what they're trying to figure out.
Yeah, that too.
Everyone's called out to deal with an infernal. The pair of them, our two spies, are told to wait here. They see an infernal being created by a hand with a sleeve that clearly belongs to one of the three lieutenants.
Yeah, the kind of priest fireman robes, yeah.
Yeah, of Company One. So they basically just run past the infernal. They're basically like, well, yeah, we'll let Company One deal with the infernal. We'll follow the criminal.
I thought it would have made more sense to have the guy with the sword take care of the infernal and the guy who can fly do the chase. Like, just, like, split up, right?
No. We'll both chase them.
They're both spies. They'll stick together. Which they do. They're pretty good. I do like the fact that this one is like, it's Shinra getting annoyed at Arthur throughout the entire episode of Arthur's goofiness.
Like Arthur kind of going like, hey, why'd you stop me from outing us as spies at various stages?
They fly around the corner and, in this alleyway, there's Karim and there's Rekka. And they're like, Arthur's about to confront them when Shinra gets him to stop. Because they're like, well, he explains later. It's like, okay, we don't know which one it is. So he's got to do more investigating to find out who it is, which means they're going to break into their room, starting with Karim's. And to do this, Arthur has changed his job class from knight to assassin.
You can't respec in the middle of a campaign, bro. That's not cool.
Don't worry.
Oh, yeah?
He's still a knight.
Till that's my lockpick here, which is a tiny version of his sword. And it's like, well, you just opened the door, but now he's going to know it's you, idiot. Ah, well, we got it. I opened the door, didn't I?
Yeah, I did like his explanation of it's like, dude, like, we're not going to get anywhere by being too surreptitious. We need to get this done. We know it's one of these two guys. Let's just get it done. And I was like, okay, he's doing it dumbly, but he is like being logical about it, or internally logic. Yeah.
Yeah. Actor says, okay, I made this tiny little version of my sword out, a little plastic little bit. No, you can use it once and it's gone, but I haven't got any more. Did it get inside? It's still a locked door, drawer, damn it. Just zoom. You said there were no more of those.
He keeps folding them up and making new ones, I'd say. Yeah.
And they find an insect in Karim's room. But then Karim shows up and says, well done, you found the insect. I was trying to find out whether... I left that there to find out if you were here also investigating.
See, I was hoping it wasn't him because I liked him as a character. But that thing where he was like, oh, yes, I left it there as a plant to see if you would find it. And I was like, that sounds like a very bad lie.
But it's good that he's not him, because then we get the great bit later on when Hal, the pair of them, when Karim's off in search of Wrecker, who they now know is...
Yes.
Is the criminal, then his weird way of talking comes back, because that's
it makes sense, though.
They get to go with him.
Yeah.
So you're my man, but you're not my man, and you're going to be not my man, but you're still my man.
You're the men that aren't my men, but still my men. Okay.
Yes.
And it's like, wait a minute, what you just said makes sense for once.
Yeah, because he's like, well, they're like, well, we're coming with you because we're your men. And they said, well, if you're my men, then I'll
follow my orders.
Stay here.
Well, we're part of a different fire department, so we don't have to follow your orders. And he's like, all right, motherfuckers, let's fucking go then.
Which they need to go because Wrecker has like toyed with Tamaki's idolization of him.
Just before that cut where it was like it looked like Tamaki was actually the one, and I was like, it can't be her. She's in the opening sequence. But it was just kind of like making you question. It's like, wait, is it though?
Yes, he's like going to teach this family a special technique to protect them from infernals.
He's got a special prayer that'll stop you from setting on fire.
Just gonna go to the abandoned warehouse and I'll show you.
Oh, sure, Father. Just like, whatever you say. It's like, and he's like, Tamaki, could you go outside for a minute? It's a secret prayer. And she's like, well, I want to stick around. That sounds pretty cool. You know, I'd do anything for you. And he gives her a big hug. A little.
Really big.
A little too big.
Yes. Mm. Like, rib breakingly.
Yeah, she gets the shit kicked out of her in this. I felt kind of bad for her, the character, and I was like, I'm not comfortable with watching this.
I don't like her, but I didn't want to see that happen.
Yeah.
Right, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously supposed to stray into
It's creepy. Supposed to be disturbing,
and
I
it's
think.
The fact
yeah.
that he's doing it all while talking like a shonen hero.
Yes! It makes it
There's
worse
his
somehow.
Eyes, big grin. Yeah, it's probably like, you know, you always hear stories about the firefighters who get the hero complex and they start fires to can save people. It's probably it's like I have a similar extension to that, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. The kind of trauma with dealing with these extreme things,
his
maybe.
Search for the people who can contain the pilot light is also creepy because when it's kids and it's like, yeah, you want to get to burning, you want to be a burning hero.
I was terrified of that because he kills the mother.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that one didn't work out. That just became an infernal and he blows her up. And I was like, all right, little kid. And I was like, okay, they're going to come in now and save the kid, right? They're going to come in now and save the kid, right?
No.
The kid
saved
himself.
Holy shit. Yeah. So was it the kid basically, like, I assume we're going to find out soon, but he seems to have.
That kid's a non-human character.
It's
some kind of like stone arrow shit. It's this thing will kill you or you'll get powers.
Yeah. 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 That's what I figured. But I figured it was like the kid was whatever this pilot light specific thing is, but it's something like the whatever generation pyrotechnic, pyrokinetic, sorry. Like it's a similar thing. It's given him some sort of fire force.
Indeed.
That kind of way.
That's the name of the anime.
I know.
So yeah, they're, it's when he realizes Tamaki's still awake, because he was going to basically leave her here unconscious for her to take the blame.
Yeah.
But then when she he realizes, oh, she's awake and seeing him do this, then that's when he starts attacking her, planning to kill her now instead.
Mm.
And she manages to use her power to, like, shoot a flare out the top of the building, which Shinra spots. And, yeah, he curb stomps Wrecker into the floor.
Mm.
Good.
He's curb stomping the insane fireman, man. And yeah, I think Tamaki will be looking for a change of occupation very soon.
Yeah, or maybe I'm going to guess from the opening that she's going to maybe
a change of
lose
department.
Her religious faith somewhat and may go and work with the
heretics.
Yeah, the less religious organized. You know, we've got a single nun, but,
That's for sure.
Yes, they're not as devout, are they? It's well been established, like, this is the most devout of the,
Well, yeah, all the lieutenants are priests, like, ordained, yes, I assume. Yeah. Mm.
The eight are the least devout. I believe the seventh are.
Well, I think the fifth were pretty non-devout based on who was leading them.
Well, I believe the seventh, do not care about anything else but their own area.
Right, okay.
Which I think we'll get hints of maybe in the next episode.
Hmm.
We left at that cell. Finale is him landing on top of the head, and I was like, blimey, is that the episode already done? Because it whipped up through.
It really did. I was like, well, not much happened, though. And I was like, yeah, because the pacing was just, like, really solid.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah, there's probably a lot more drawn out, a lot more tense confrontations as they try and, like, you know, narrow down who might be the killer in our midst. But not the government. It got him, like, in the bad end of the episode, but he's obviously going to be just a small fry in a larger scheme.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like he's been manipulated by elsewhere. Like, the phone call at the start, like, he's working with other people. So, yeah, he's not the mastermind. He's the pusher, basically.
It definitely feels like a story where there's an end planned from the beginning. It's not just seeing, like, how long can I keep this comic going.
Yeah. Speaking of phones, too, I really dig in the design of the phone box he was using at the start. I don't know what those numbers are called. A little kind of, like, electric, like, vacuum tube. Design going on there.
They do have some kind of, like turn of century kind of steampunky kind of stuff going on in this, which is nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say, though, initially after watching the demon girl next door, and, like, I was, like, looking at her costume, and I was like, I don't know about this. This is a bit weird because she's pretty young, but they are making a joke of it. But then I watched this episode and it was that fucking scene with her having lunch, and it's like, whoops, she falls on, like, everyone at lunch. And I was just like, yeah, no, it could be a lot worse. It's fine.
Yeah. But that's also being made light of. It's like, dude, you gotta stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're kind of, I mean, like, they were trying to have lunch, to be fair.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't have time to watch the 4-minute episode of Hakata Mentai Piri Karako-chan, episode 9, Enjoy the Breeze, Shiraito Falls. Did you get to see it, Dwayne?
I did. God, and the fact that I have to do this, I'm kind of like, what the fuck happened? crap. They go to some place, I assume it's called Shiraito Falls. I assume there's puns I'm not fucking getting all over the shop here. Because they meet the spirit of the falls, who seems kind of super sketchy, and he's trying to get them to try the new water slide that he has installed on the falls. But it turns out he's not the real spirit of the falls. He's like a spirit of a specific kind of noodle, obviously. And then they have some of the noodles, but then they think the actual spirit of the falls that shows up is also sketchy for some reason. But I'm guessing that leads into the next episode. I'm not exactly sure. I was very confused. I was like, I'm missing a lot here.
Delicious.
I know I am.
Then we got Vinland Saga, episode 9, The Battle of London Bridge, in which Thorfinn is, well, I've not reunited because I guess he's never met him before. Is he great uncle?
Is he? Thorfinn's
mother is Thorkill's niece, I believe. I think that's what he says later on.
Great uncle, yeah, there will be it. Yeah, jeez, I forgot all about that.
His grunkle.
Uncle Grandpa.
Yeah, kind of. Similarities.
It's Uncle Grandpa like Goku, because that's essentially what Thorkell kind of is, which is why you can't buy him off. He's just here because he was a fight dude, strong dudes.
That was a really good scene where you have your man coming up in the longbow going like, no, we just want to talk to Thorkell. He's like, yeah, what's up? Join the Vikings. You're a Viking. Come on, Viking it up. And he's like, also we'll pay you double. We're going to win this. And he's like, so you're saying you're here with like the biggest army in the world and you guys can totally win and these guys are totally fucked. And all the English people are going like, is he talking shit about us? I don't know. I can't speak his language. And when he's saying like, these guys suck and they can't fight, so this is going to be really fun to fight all you guys. I am definitely getting into Valhalla. This is going to be sweet. Yeah. And then starts lobbing, like, I guess they're spike cabers. I don't even know what the fuck you'd call that.
They're throwing like rocks down a boat in front of you. This guy's like the biggest, heaviest boulder you can see firing his lobs on him. But yeah, he's just throwing like foam poles.
Basically.
With pointy end of the and just like piercing the boats and sinking them. I call that my foam pole boulder sinker maneuver. Yeah. How do you like that? Well, we'll wash out that name a little bit later. For now, have another one, kapow! So they can't even get close, but we need some kind of like wily, stealthy guy who can kind of sneak his way in there. I wonder who we have in our squad, in our ranks, who could do such a thing. We'll send in the boy.
It's worth noting that the person who is horrified by Thorkell's behaviour is Flocky.
Yeah.
He hasn't started calling him Dicehead yet, has he, in this?
No.
Well, he was trying to win him over, so probably not, yeah.
That's what Thorkill, and I believe other people, start calling him Flocky throughout the series.
Oh, right, sorry,
due to the shape of his haircut. that was the point at which I got the theme of the series. It's people being annoyed at Vikings, especially other Vikings.
It's hard being a Viking with all these fucking Vikings around.
Well, that also goes like when Floki he's gone soft in a way. You know, if he just like signed up for like an officer position with the Royal Army and he's forgotten his Viking ways, man, he's forgotten his roots. He's all about fucking protocol and doing things the official way and trying to not fight guys and buy them off and do all this like bureaucracy and diplomacy shit. And if not diplomacy of the sword and the spear and fire. But, like, you can't, if he is, lost touch with his roots, his way of life, he would have realized that Thorkell is not a guy you can reason with. He's Goku, you can't reason with Goku, so why even bother and try to do it? He just thinks this approach will work on anybody, because what's great so far, but this is a guy you can't.
Based off what little I've seen of him, he does seem like the kind of guy who would give you time to power up so you can be at your maximum level so he can fight you that way. He does seem that sort.
Yeah. And he's positively elated when he gets to fight Thorfinn and loses two fingers in the process.
Yeah, that was a pretty fucking well-animated piece where he's running across the mast. Like, they're just trying to dump him on the boat and then get the fuck away as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, little guy, fucking A. This guy must be, if he's small, he must be good if they sent him at me.
Yeah.
Okay, the rest of the army, this guy's mine, okay? Just me and him now, and he's just swinging a fucking phone pole at this guy trying to stab him, and he's like, this guy's too fucking tall, I can't reach his neck. It's bullshit.
Yes. He's got to go over the legs and try and get him out under the knees.
And even his initial thing where, like, the guy's just throwing punches, it's like, wait a minute, that punch would have taken my head off.
Have you seen the guy? He's like some kind of mythical ogre.
And then he's not really treating it like a fight to death. He's like, whoa, you nearly got me there. That was a pretty good one.
After he's like put one of his daggers like through Torkoal's hand. I suppose Torkoal caught the blade with just using his hand, his whole palm, and looking the blade dig into it. It's like, oh,
yeah, it's like, finally, I gotta cut it. And it's like, nope, I gotcha. And he's just swinging him around like a rag doll, basically.
It's like fucking when, what's this? Jerry's cousin comes and beats up Tom. This goes bam, 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 bam. but he's able to just ask him, he's kind of totally kind of waiting for his chance to kind of get the knife out. He might as well take off the two fingers, but he's able to roll off like, into the water and escape. And then, like, Torkoal's going, oh man, it's already gone. It's like, good game, dude. I'll see you next week, right? It's like waving the bloody stump of his fingers and in the air is streaming with blood.
Yeah, it's like, it's to the death next time, right, buddy?
Nice fella.
What a good kid. You see him? He really fucked up my hand. Good job.
So then we go back to the Danish camp, and it's not looking good. So Sven has decided that he's going to leave 4,000 men in the charge of his barely a man son, Canute.
Yeah, it's like, it's not worth sticking around here for like half a year to fucking finish off London. That's just one goddamn city. I got a whole fucking country to do.
Yeah, it's there are bigger, easier places around that we could just get. And I would also, just encircle the whole thing and get them all later when we have more resources to crush it.
Because, I think it's Floki's thing. It was like, we'll get them within like a year or like half a year because they have to run out of supplies.
But we'll leave some guys here just to, lay siege to them, just like a protracted siege and just, probably run those resources down a little bit quicker. But we'll leave like some clues behind.
Man out of his weakling son.
He needs to take a good loss. He needs to be fighting an uphill battle. That kind of way, yeah.
Then we get Thorfinn emerging out of the river.
Busters, he's like a broken, not like a broken, he's got a dislocated shoulder.
He says he has a few broken ribs and a twisted ankle, yeah.
Like, you look like shit, boy. You think you can march with the rest of us? Pops the arm back in and starts limping away alongside the rest of the guys exiting along the march.
Well, like he did this whole thing because it's like, hey, if you can bring me the head of that giant, I'll give you a fight to the death. How about that?
Yeah.
Which is like, you fucked up on the giant head thing. Are we leaving you behind?
Then Forkill realizes that everyone's retreating and he's like, no, come back, guys, come back.
Yeah. The Londoners all like cheering. It's like, we won. They're running with the tail between their legs. And he's like, what? But you had loads of guys. What the hell? Come on, beat us up. We suck. dear. Being too good at your job. That's his problem.
Yeah. So next week, I guess we get the first full appearance of Canute. As a character, as opposed to just a man standing who other people talk about.
Like, wearing a cool looking helmet, like, ooh, the Canute guy, what's his deal? Oh, he's a bit of a wuss. But,
nice helmet though.
Yeah, pretty cool.
And also, probably, arguably, the second lead of the show.
Yeah.
I've read so far ahead now. I think I'm up to like halfway through volume 9 of the Kodansha collection.
Oh, jeez.
I am 9, okay. Your past where I stopped reading originally. Yeah. I managed to pick it back up again, but then, this came out. I don't think it's to read it that when, yeah. Whenever this finishes and I'm kind of, back in the Vinland Saga mode, I'll pick it up off the comic again. That was like I'm not sure what this is. Not quite certain when this might end, but I was probably a good deal.
I think it'll end.
Yeah, I was a good deal past where.
Yeah, this is probably going to end. The point where it says end of prologue, and then you go, "What?
Oh yeah. of course, yeah."
Yeah, spoiler alert: this is just the prologue because
it's a good prologue.
This story has nothing to do with Vinland.
They've mentioned it once.
Yes.
Once.
This is just the stuff which Thorfinn has to reflect upon during his actual Vinland saga. As do all the other characters who remain in the story.
Who survive.
Yes. But yeah, the choice, they're gonna, whenever they do the next season, they're gonna have to undo the choice of keeping things chronologically, because later on you start having other characters having flashbacks. Who having said that, that fight in the first episode is like from way deep in the comic.
Yeah.
So maybe I do need to go back and watch episode one and see if another character is actually in that, episode one that I didn't notice before. But I'm sure they'll have to start doing, they will have to start doing flashbacks because of one particular character who's not connect, who's, unless they don't, it'd be really weird if they do it. I mean, it would, people would be really happy in one way, but it would be, seems so out of place in the rest of the story. Because it is a flashback to another character encountering Thorfinn. And it would be during the time period that we'll get in this series. Or maybe it's happened already. I don't know. I still think the choice to put everything in chronological order in this season is a mistake. But
is that because they'll be adapting stuff that isn't in chronological order? Or do you think the non-chronological order of the comic works better?
It's a bit weird. It kind of jumps ahead a bit and then back a bit. As characters like lives take a very separate route, and but we occasionally have to check back in on other people.
So seeing that out of order makes that less obvious, I suppose.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be like you go back to that and then back to that and then oh now we see them drawing together again.
Okay.
I don't know. It'd be anyway, that's probably not the thing I have to worry about for another year plus, I guess. So I'll just carry on reading comics as they come out. Next on the list is Detective Conan, episode 952, The Unsolved Cocktail Case, Part 1. In which we open with a scene which I don't know where this is appearing, whether this is a flashback or whether this is something happening later in this episode.
It's later, because it says after that scene, it says like 9 hours earlier, and I was like, hang on a fucking sec, you can't do that if we're going to get back to this like in the second episode later or whatever.
Because the rest of the episode does not, I don't even really know. Well, one of them's there, I don't know how the other guy gets into the story.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it opens with Zero or Bourbon or whatever his other, the name he's using. When he's pretending to be the waiter and apprentice.
John Coolman.
Being confronted by the guy who he thinks killed his partner, who is also undercover in the Black Organization, who he doesn't know, I don't think yet he knows, or maybe he does know at this point and doesn't care, but the guy from the FBI, who was also undercover in the Black Organization, but now isn't. He's now undercover as the guy who's looking after Conan's parents' house while they're away. Anyway, they're pulling guns on each other and looks like it's all about to go off. Maybe they'll actually not try and kill each other and explain to each other that not everything is as it seems, but that seems unlikely based on previous encounters where normally they're trying to kill each other. But then you say, yes, we go backwards in time, where a very rich man has had a poison pen letter delivered to him. And that is why he would like the great detective, I can't remember his name, but he's not in it as much as he was at the start of the series. Ran's dad, Maury. Kogoro Maury. It's all come back to me now. yes, to, come with him to dinner. Cause is the message that he's going to be killed at this?
The message is, don't come to the Black Bunny Club.
That's it, yes. Ah, so it might have been not a threat, but a warning. Yes, so to like offer him some protection and investigate, figure out who at the club might be trying to kill him. And
He goes to the place where he's not supposed to go. And your man's like, are you fucking crazy? It's like, it's grand, dude. I got guards outside. I got the great detective here. I'm sure we'll be fucking good. if he tries something, we'll fucking catch him here. That's why I came here.
And Zero pulls a trick where he accidentally leaves his phone in the office.
They keep doing like knowing glances and shit. When he put down the plate of sandwiches and it's like he left his phone after him, I was like, okay, that was on purpose. Cause everything this thing shows me, I'm like, you showed me that on purpose.
Yes. Cause it's really well made. No.
Yeah. It seems like the animation looks bad, but it's like, no, everything is there for a reason. And it makes me go like, there's a thing later that I was like, is that an animation error? And I was like, no, it couldn't be.
Yes, he goes, oh, I'm so scatterbrained, I'm not a very good detective, I left my phone in your office, but that's just so he can see where Ram keeps her keys to the office.
Yeah, I was wondering what he was specifically looking for there, like which key it was, what was the thing, but it comes up later where, yeah.
And meanwhile, Conan's like, I know that you've done that so you can see.
Yeah, but he can't say anything, obviously.
And so, yeah, Kogoro's like, oh, I'll bring the kids along. It's probably a trendy little restaurant. And it turns out, no, it's a bunny girl bar. And but that does not stop him bringing the kids in.
And does not stop him acting like a fucking creep.
Yes, he is.
Because, like, the guy he's meeting is like, dude, it's not that kind of bar. Don't be fucking crude. This is a classy joint.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't get to see the message until they're at the restaurant. That's the thing, yeah. He's like, hang on a minute. Yeah. You've just brought us to the place. And then we're introduced to our suspects one by one. We've got his butler, who appears to be fairly incompetent based on his behavior.
A little too incompetent.
A little too incompetent, yes. We meet his favorite bunny girl, who's the victim. And then a rival bunny girl, and I guess he himself ends up being a suspect as well.
Mm.
The bunny girl who he invites to eat with them is the one who gets arsenic poisoning, which it looks like was put in her glass, possibly, I'm going to guess. They don't say it, but it seems like it was probably on the coaster that she used to cover her glass.
Like, I double-checked, the coaster wasn't flipped or anything. So I'm guessing it was on the bottom of the coaster or something like that. Like, so essentially she added it to her own drink.
Poisoned the entire table.
Yeah, because there's bits like where it's like she's eating the fruit platter and it's like it couldn't have been that because the rich man, that's his occupation, also ate from that. And as Conan points out and then has to retract, is like, I saw it on a TV show. it couldn't have been food poisoning because she mentioned it's like, oh, she's starving because she missed lunch. So it's like, and food poisoning takes like half an hour to take effect.
Longer than that, I think. But yeah.
Like a minimum half an hour, I think is the way he put it. And it's like, okay, if she skipped lunch and that was the first thing she ate, then that wouldn't have been what poisoned her. So it was more than likely the drink.
Yes, he says, I saw it on a TV show. And then Maury's like, it sounds like a crazy TV show.
Oh, Case Closed. Ever heard of it?
So she's not dead. She's just in hospital with arsenic poisoning. Then meanwhile, the other suspect, buddy girl, hands back Rand's purse that apparently Zero had handed to her as if to say, I don't know whose purse this is.
I found it over there by the bathroom because, yeah, she's looking for her purse and she's like, I don't have much money in there, but I have my keys in there. And it's like, oh, and she searches through her purse and is like, ooh, phew, my keys are there. It's not like someone could have made a copy or something. All good.
Then Inspector Meguru shows up and Conan starts reciting all the clues to him.
Really fucking laying it on, yeah. Here's the suspects, here's the clues.
Zero adds a few more of his own clues that he'd spotted. It's not as good as the episode from like ages ago now, where it was just like everybody was turning up, or like far too many detectives. So when Meguri turns up, he doesn't know really why he needs to be there. all the people had done something which may have allowed them to poison the glass.
Yeah, you one spilled wine on her lapel, which kind of forced her to leave the table, giving you an opportunity to poison the glass. The butler dropped his glasses where the boss had to go out and get him the glasses from the car, which I was like, ooh, is the boss going to get killed here? And it's like, no, he had guards at the car and the detective guy seed him out anyway, so it wasn't so bad. But it's like, was that the butler or the boss's plan? That kind of thing. There's two things that really bugged me. The really detail of the paint on her nails. I was like, why did you show that in any kind of detail? She's got like flowers painted on them or something. Daisies or something. I can't remember what it was. And also, like, in the style of show, it's like, that's an extraneous amount of detail. It must be important. But the other bit was the butler had his glasses stepped on by his employer. And there's a scene where it kind of cuts away from him when and then it cuts back to him in the background and he's fucking wearing glasses. And I was like, hang on a fucking second. Where did he get those? The boss hasn't come back with his glasses yet. And I was like, that's got to be something, unless it is an animation error and it's fucking red herring in that case.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm guessing that, because there never seems to be anything sexual between the bunny girl and the guy who's hired.
That's what the other bunny girl is saying, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that she's like an illegitimate daughter.
That he wants to take care of and shit.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, maybe he's just discovered this, and maybe that's why the butler is offing her, because...
Yeah, because initially, like, he's, like, the detective is like, oh, you're like this kind of horny old man club. And he's like, no, I get my suits done down the road and I just pop in here while they're doing the finishing job. And it kind of seems like this isn't his kind of place, but he's very generous to everyone in there. Yeah, it's weird.
And then the preview has nothing to do with the episode we've seen. It's some sort of traumatic flashback that Zero is having of his own childhood.
That makes me slightly worried because this is called the Unsolved Cocktail Case. And I was like, I wanted to see what the solution is.
How do we make this goddamn cocktail? What's the secret ingredient?
It's arsenic. Arsenic was the secret ingredient.
Delicious.
I think it's a new opening and a new ending as well.
Oh, fucking that theme that they play out on when, like, they're kind of, you know, going through the suspects, your ones in the hospital bed. That was rad. It wasn't the end theme bit, but it was like just some kick-ass guitar. I really enjoyed that. Is that usual? I feel like that's a new one. But maybe it might have been in one of the prior episodes, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. Well, obviously we'll get the general theme. There was like specific stuff in the... they've now had, with the black organization thing, they've now got the silhouette of the man they suspect as being the leader. Even though he can't possibly be, because he would be far too old to be alive.
Unless,
yes.
Mysteries. Well, it does exist in a borough rig, a mystery drug that can turn him into a child, exactly, so who knows what possibilities could exist.
Maybe he turned himself into a child and then grew old again.
Well, it makes sense, because it's probably something we're trying out, like some kind of like eternal youth drug.
Eternal serum. Youthening drug. So yeah, you get old and you just take the drug again, you go young.
Except it's like only been like not very long since it was invented, but there you go.
Yeah.
Next up, it's Sunday, and it's all the Toei stuff, and we'll start with Ryosouga, episode 24, The Karate Dojo of Love. Once again, Canelo falls in love, and he thinks a woman has asked him to get married, but because he's too busy thinking that a woman's asked him to get married, he's not actually listening to what she was saying. And so when she says, come and meet my father, he thinks, obviously,
meet the in-laws, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it turns out by the end of the episode, what she'd actually asked was basically her father runs a karate dojo. What she really wants to do is work at a patisserie. But her father won't let her go to France with her boyfriend and work at a patisserie because she needs to stay here and take over the dojo from him. When he dies, but she'd asked Canelo, would he take over the dojo after she sees him do some karate fighting off bad guys? He did not hear that at all. and just thought she was asking him to marry her. And so the punchline is at the end.
As you do.
When he realizes, oh, what? You want me to take over the dojo? Yes. And she's like, I'm off with the, this is where the boyfriend's revealed right at the end. Yes, I'm off to Paris. Meanwhile, during the episode, is it Oto? Yeah, Oto, the little sister, is wanting to spy because she thinks, oh, he's finally found love, but I want to make sure this is the right woman for him. And she gets Melto to come and help her. Meanwhile, the others think that Melto's got on a date with Oto. The ones who are like incredibly aged aren't completely shocked, but Yui's like, what? No, that's terrible. Because obviously she looks like a 13-year-old girl because that's what the actress is. But they're not. They're just both spying on the others out on a date. And then the others follow, catch up with them, and they're like, well, this is a lot less exciting than the date we thought we were going to be spying on. Then a monster turns up, and it's got a patisserie theme. That's where the hint is that Canelo is getting this all wrong, because it's being created from the dojo owner's daughter. But they take care of it. She's further traumatized because her dad's been tied up, and the dad is actually Wizaru in disguise again. And then everything's revealed at the end about what a terrible mistake Canelo's made, and which really annoys his sister. And so she runs across the dojo and does a jump kick into his chest, sending him flying. And it looks like the actors had the legitimate reaction in the background cut rather than acting, because it is the actual actors doing the stunt. And they had an earlier episode where there was a bunch of kids who did martial arts. I don't know whether this actress is also trained with them. Because it was like, it looks like a flying kick, but it's actually just a jump kick. But the way they film it with the run-up makes it look like a flying kick. But when you go back and watch it again. But I was like, what? That's insane. I was not expecting this small child to go and beat up this adult. And be able to leap high enough to hit him in the chest. But yeah, it was a funny episode and an amusing way to end it. Then I'll give Niall a chance to talk about Star Twinkle Pretty Cure.
Yeah, I'm gonna run 29 and 30 together. I'm home, Lun. It's Plasma Has Melancholy, along with Lala's thoughts and an AI's feelings. To finally get to Lala's home planet. It is a kind of cool sort of Jetson style environment. Everything is all automated. Everything run by AI computers. Everyone has their own personal AI, like obviously in the rest of the show, but it's all is like tied onto this, mother AI, this kind of main one that they all kind of, interact with. However, when they come back, the AIs, they upload or sync up with the mother one. And it's, when they do that, they are basically overwritten with the new things, with the new information that they've all shared together, and the AI will still be there, it won't quite be the same as it was before. So they're kind of, ooh, we'll have our AI, but will it be the same one as it had before? It'll be different. It's kind of worrying. Also, the girls have got to keep mum about where they're from, because Earth is not actually part of the Galactic Alliance, and if you go about revealing the Galactic Alliance and aliens and stuff to the Earthlings who aren't ready for it yet to join the space government, then this could be disastrous.
Yeah, Prime Directive, got it.
Yes, exactly, Prime Directive. I had that written down somewhere, like, you know, today when I was watching it. Like, oh yeah, that's exactly what it was supposed to be about. But we get to see then why Lala is so hesitant about coming home to here, because her twin brother Lolo, he's the golden boy. Everyone loves him. Your kind of potentials, your kind of aspirations in life, your like what you could potentially be, is all doled out to you by the computer. And so according to Lolo, he's going to be like a first-rate space investigator man. He's going to go out and find hidden treasures and secrets and bring peace into the universe. Well, as she's like a level 8 investigator, she's basically like a space bin lorry driver. That's all she's good for. It's like, oh, that's just, and she's always like up, this guy's always been put up on a pedestal by her mom and dad, whose names are Man and Dad. and he's all feeling proud about this. And just kind of getting ground down, so much. The big message that got garbled, and had respect for is that, Lolo, he found one of the princess pens and he's brought it back to the play. He's going to get a big award ceremony. And Lala is, not voicing this at all, but she must be in somewhere inside going, motherfucker, what the fuck? I've been getting fucking pens all over the fucking galaxy. And this guy's getting, where's my fucking medal at? Like, but you can't say that out loud because he's been off doing like different things that aren't been done properly according to protocol, according to what the AI says you should be doing from birth. This doesn't quite know how to tell the family about it. It winds up then when the baggers attack and they turn like the old professor boss of the pen analysis lab into like a big monster guy, and then they defeat it. It's like, what's going on here? The lab was destroyed. It was a pen. You try to steal the pen, Lala, because you're jealous of your brother. Arrest her. Put her. You must be taken in with us. And then suddenly on the run. It's like, what the fuck? Which is when the baggers come back again. There's Iwan, who is not officially part of the space pirates, but we'll work with them because she wants to kill them pre-cure, especially Cure Cosmo. So they work together and she hacks into the main system, the main AI, and just turns everything against the rest of the planet. Lala's family then are kind of trying to escape all this, but because they live in Jetson's world and they kind of get around on hoverboards and travelators and stuff, they can't run very far. They just like, you can run like a couple of yards and they're already out of breath.
I stole that joke from Harvey Birdman.
Again, it was regurgitated then in grander form in the film Wall-E. Mankind's eventual evolution according going along our path.
Hmm.
Luckily, Laz went out doing like athletic pre-cure things and was able to rescue them like by actually running and grabbing them and dodging out of the way. But doesn't can't quite do much about the AI who's in control of everything on the planet, and they get all stared up. And we get a merry go from One Piece, like sacrificing itself to save the crew, moment when like Lala's AI, who was in control of the rocket ship, just like comes down of its own accord and just like gets in the way. But it's getting overtaken by the hacking, and it's like, I really enjoyed the memories we made together. I really enjoyed carrying it around. We were flashing back to all the happy times. They had like painting the ship and decorating. They had a slumber party in there. It was all nice. And then like, it's all written. It's like, oh no, it's dead. So they fucking Hulk out. Lala just hulks the fuck out and just like, man, fuck this shit. It just goes, ma'am, dad, bro, I got something to tell you. I'm a pre-cure. You just gotta deal with it. I know it's not what you expected of me, but this is who I am right now. I got transformed all the girls who got kicked these guys' asses, and they pull out all the moves. They pull out all the special moves that would enhance the pens and do the combination attack, and they just fuck up the big monster that the bad guys have made up.
Hmm.
And the first point kind of saved the day. The AI is actually okay because it's... Basically, it's love, it's memories, the attachment to the girl is so strong that it couldn't be overwritten even when it synced up with the main AI. Family is really impressed. It's like, oh, actually, you exceed our expectations altogether because according to like your numbers or your percentages, you shouldn't have been able to do this at all. But you've beaten the system, beaten the odds, and we're very proud of you. Okay, cool. It's really nice. It's all happy and fun. And go back to Earth now. However, because it reveals us like pre-cures, to in front of one of the officers of the Galactic Alliance, he says, "We gotta bring those pre-cures in and get them to work for us because they know what's going on. We need their help to stop the space pirates." There's only one pen left to go and all as well. So soon will be the bad guys be stepping in, like the big bad guys, which we've seen like the big hulking blue second in command in the evil base. Wasn't done nothing yet, and I think he's gonna be wheeled out to put this situation to rights. Next episode, if presumably they don't get arrested by the Galactic like Space Patrol for just repeating the existence of aliens and stuff to the rest of the planet, and I think J.J. Abrams is going to be brought in under the same charges as well, according to the preview. So, it was just like fun when it actually got to the planet. It was like a big deal about what the actual thing is going on. And I quite like Lana as well as the kind of character. She's like the, you know, again, the alien, like kind of fish out of water trying to adjust to things on Earth as well. But she also feels out of place on her own planet as well. And
yeah.
It's like having it tough. And it was a little bit in there as well about maybe we shouldn't let AI dominate everything because it can be wrong about things. Also, we shouldn't be like entrusting it to, you know, to perform essential functions like, you know, medical support or security things because it can easily be hacked by a bad, like terrorist actor, say, and put to malevolent ends, i.e. our society, you know. Kind of like how Kitter's almost saying, like, maybe you should get off the phone. Maybe like, Preaker was saying, maybe we shouldn't, indulge the blockchain. Maybe we should like not feed the algorithm. Maybe that could be a good thing we could do. And maybe like go out and punch some bad guys instead. How about that?
It's also saying you should crib like notes from several different sci-fi series at once. You get some Star Trek in there. You get some Gattaca in there. You get some fucking, yeah, let's do it all at once. Get some Jetsons on top. Nice.
Yeah. Well, think of it as well, like the young audience watching this certainly would probably never have seen Gattaca. They probably never watched a Star Trek in their life, but maybe off of this they could be interested and see that up themselves. and then like Ethan Hawke can be their new hunk they hang over their over their bed, even though, well, you know, is he hunky anymore? Maybe, according to some people. Yeah, it's if I can all go back and forth with it, we're nice diversions when I go onto different planets, kind of going to Fishman Island and stuff like that, but it was like, this had like the real feel, the real emotions going on in it. So that's what it's at its best. And it's, this kind of maybe the last couple of days, it was, you know, it's been very run down by various things. And, it's kind of watching this and it's like, oh, I've barely had time or energy or attention to watch, even anime I like even, but then I had it on at work and I watched them back to back and I felt immediately renewed. It was like,
okay,
all the kind of positivity just welled up inside me and it was really infectious. So, you know, it's like, yes, this is what I fucking watched, anime for. Besides all the kind of cool stuff as well, like putting off impressive piece of animation and storytelling. But this is just like, you know, relentless, like good times and good feelings. And that's helps to kind of recharge you when you're feeling a little bit drained and a little bit kind of run down by either life or whatever else is going on with you. So yeah, I recommend it, even on, possibly has like a medical aid for depression or something like that to help you get over, help you kind of cope with things. It's good stuff.
Meanwhile, in the world of Kamen Rider, it's Kamen Rider 01, Episode 1. I am the president of the Kamen Rider. In which we are introduced to our new Kamen Rider, though of course he isn't at the beginning of the episode, Arutu Hayden, a 22-year-old would-be stand-up comedian. However, one day he is visited by a secretary from his grandfather's company, Hayden Intelligence. These are humor gear. They produce humor gears, androids. And he's brought to a meeting because his grandfather's died. And it turns out he's going to be named the new CEO of Hayden Intelligence. And all he has to, because apparently in the future there will be a problem with the humor gear and that they've produced and they will attack humanity. And so therefore the president needs to use, what's it called? What's the belt called? Anyway, the Hayden 01 driver and a progress key, to turn into 01 and, defeat the humor gears when they attack humans. But, the guy who thought he was going to be made CEO is mad at this, but Aruto's like, no, I don't want to do this. I want to be a stand-up comedian. I'm having none of this. You can be the CEO. I'm leaving. And then he goes back to the amusement park, which is where he was at the start of the episode. He was annoyed at the start of the episode because he was like, there was a android stand-up comedian who I maybe one of Macho 29, I'll have to check. He was like a bodybuilding comedian.
Ah. Android.
Hmm.
And he was like, androids can't tell jokes. And then this guy gets over much better than he did. So he goes back to the park, but then this android has been got at by a member of MetsuboJinrai.net, a cyber-terrorist organization who operate out of the sunken city of Daybreak Town.
Why would it have to write a full web address in there where anybody can find them?
Branding.
Well, it looks like somebody's already nabbed it and it wasn't Toei because it directs
the... Oh, for fuck's sake. Why would you not nab it beforehand? Come on, guys.
EvilTerrorist.org. Blogspot.org.
I'll have to do it.
According to Wikipedia, it means destructivethunder.net. So yeah, one of the things we've been introduced to two here, Hirobi, and who's seems sensible, and Jin, who is a giggling fool. Jin is the one who goes out into the world and rewrites this humor gear, stand-up comedian. And it's quite tragic because he's like, no, my job is to make people laugh. And then he turns into like praying mantis type monster and turns other humor gears who are nearby into, troopers. It looks like they spread like a virus to make other ones corrupted. Which draws the attention of AIMS, the Artificial Intelligence Military Service. We've got two more of our main characters, the only two who aren't wearing helmets in the crew who show up to take care of these robots. Asaimu Fuwa, who is incredibly angry. He hates androids, and so he seems incredibly happy to get the chance to blow some up. He struggles, so he has to go back to their van where he pulls out a special-looking gun out of a glass cabinet to shoot them with, which, based on preview material, will eventually allow him to turn into a Kamen Rider as well. And Yua Yaiba, who is the one taking command, who seems incredibly exasperated about this man who won't listen to her commands. And I believe she will also turn into a Kamen Rider down the line. So they will take care of the basic corrupted humor gears, but who's going to be able to take care of this praying mantis? Well, luckily, Izu, the secretary, shows up again with the 01 driver. And seeing, like, people, like, the crowds and the funfair owner threatened, or amusement park owner threatened, Naruto puts on the driver and becomes Kamen Rider Zero. And, basically summoning, when he puts in the progress key, that connects him, well, first of all, he gets like a VR training manual type thing he has to do very quickly before he gets killed. but basically he's like OMAC from the Jack Kirby comic. So when he puts
it... Oh, he downloads what he needs to do, be.
Yes.
Put her eye going on.
And then a giant satellite beams down his power-ups.
Straight up brother eye. You called it that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was like downloads it from the internet. It's like, nope.
No, it looks like something like this. There seems to be like another one of those satellites sunken in the Daybreak Town lake. Which is still operational. So that seems to be maybe what's behind the bad guys. It's like an evil satellite.
A satellite that's on the ground. That would be the inverse of a regular satellite.
That his granddad had made Naruto a android copy of his father, who died possibly during the same thing that's caused this town to sink in the past. We get a little flashback with that. And, so he finally, beats up the guys and then, yes, the, secretary informs him, well, now you're the CEO. Cause the instructions were that the CEO was to use this belt. And as you use that belt, you're now the CEO.
Weird loophole, but okay.
It is a weird loophole. Also, he like tells a joke and she goes, oh yes, that is very, she doesn't laugh at it, but then she explains the joke that she understood the joke, the logic within it.
Which is worse, because if she understood it, then she should have left.
Yes, he was not impressed with this. But yeah, I believe it ends with him heading back to, in the car, being dragged back to the offices as now the CEO. And, Yeah, the very final line is don't explain my joke. Yeah, there you go. And so next week it looks like one of the cops gets their power up because there's another Kamen Rider in the preview. AI's enemy or ally, apparently, next week. I believe this is mainly the crew who did Kamen Rider X-Aid. I will say the initial cast seems a lot better than the initial cast of X-Aid, where X-Aid's problem was they'd like hired one guy who was really good, and I think he cost more than everyone else, and so they couldn't hire him in all the episodes.
Hmm.
So he get quote-unquote get killed off part of the way through. But as it turns out, one of the other actors had an amazing performance, so he did get better later on as he went. Whereas everyone seems pretty good. I like it that it's another Kamen Rider where everyone's adults. Because I tend not to like the ones when it's kids. Even though Falls is all kids, and that's my favourite one. But is it my favourite one? No, Build's my favourite one now. Falls used to be my favourite one. Build is certainly my favourite one now. But this was a good start. I like the design for 01 with the bright highlighter pen colours to him. It's a bit weird when he's shown in darkness at the start because he doesn't have that brightness on his arms, so he kind of looks like he's only got a head, torso, and legs.
The angry eyes.
Yes.
Angry eyes.
But after the mess mad and intense. CO, it's a massive improvement. Then we're into One Piece, episode 900, The Greatest Day of My Life, Otama and Her Sweet Red Bean Soup, in which Otama has the greatest day of her life when she gets to eat some red bean soup.
Yeah, that's what it says on the tin.
Also gets told off for eating poisoned water.
Like twice.
Yeah. there's like a nice little subtle bit which makes more sense now. We know more about Okiku. About when we see her reaction to when, because the initial reaction is Zoro's like, wow, you're tall. But then Luffy's like, yeah, but we've met taller women than her. Big Mom's massive. And then, yes, I think then Okiku has like a little reaction, which will be, make more sense, down the lines. We learn more about her.
Yeah, there's several moments of them doing the, it's like, hey, we're mentioning fucking shit we're not supposed to casually. And it's like, hey, what are your guys' names? It's like, Zoro Juro. And I'm like, I'm Monkey D. And he's like, dude, get the fake name.
I'm Saru D. Luffy, sir.
Well, no, it's Zoro who comes up with that. This is Luffy Taro.
And then yes.
Osiru is like, oh, you foreigners.
Fucking weebs coming over here. Wow, such a crazy country.
And then Osiru badmouths the Shogun and Batman. One of Kaidu's,
not that Batman.
No, not that Batman, but he is called Batman. Fires an arrow at her, which
legally distinct Batman.
Stops and flings back at him. And, they're like, oh, you're gonna fight, gonna have to fight, gonna have to fight. Oh, no, another one has kidnapped Otama, a guy who can run really fast.
And will exclaim such very loudly.
Yes. What are we gonna do? End of episode. Next week, preview, it's the guy with the weird... Is it a lion in his chest? It is a lion in his chest.
Yeah. Hmm. It's only... It might be in his belly.
In his belly, yeah.
The other dude has got an elephant in his chest that can shoot stuff out of the trunk.
That's probably what we're thinking. Yeah.
We probably won't see him for a year in the anime.
Look forward to it.
Because they kind of drag stuff out here, but he kind of, there was like a little bit flashback spread about, but like, the scene you mentioned with Zoro trying to attract Luffy's attention as to not reveal himself. There's a lot of back and forth, comedic back and forth, more than there was in the comic.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of glad for it because obviously these guys haven't been together on the show for so long. It's kind of like, oh yeah, these guys play really well off each other. They're both dipshits, but in different regards.
Yes. that's pretty much it. That's the plot elements which happened.
Yeah, they're going to have to cut it somewhere just to stay behind, basically.
Well, yeah, only 5 more years to go. So he says.
So he knows, I feel like that.
I'm gonna guess.
I feel like that number was 8 years, like fucking 10 years ago. So I don't know, man.
I think like 1,000 chapters was the last time he was claiming something.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's not going to be the case, but.
Hmm.
That was on some YouTube show when he'd had some YouTubers come around his house and kept his head hidden behind a bubble. Because, yeah, I guess he does not want anyone to see know what he looks like.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, probably. Except we know that he lives in a massive house next to a poor old man.
We know he's had plastic surgery, so he could look like anything.
And then finally, it's Gengage no Kintaro, episode 71, Karakasa's Umbrella Troubles. In which Karakasa envies modern umbrellas.
They're so trendy.
And this guy, he left his umbrella behind. What's he gonna, how's he going to feel when he realizes he's lost his umbrella?
I'll show him.
Must go and help him. But it turns out this guy does not love umbrellas as much as Karakasa thinks he ought to love umbrellas. And then he remembers something that Ratman had told him about the nature of Charanko.
Spirit hair Chanchanko.
Chanchanko, that's it.
His hair shirt.
His hair shirt, gross. Yes. Is that if another yokai wears it, they can shape change. Because initially he was suggesting you stole it so he could look like a modern umbrella. But instead he steals it.
Because you can change your shape, yeah.
So he could look like a human and bully this man into looking after umbrellas best.
Be like a huge birdie guy who's like, hey, buddy, you forgot your umbrella. Take your fucking umbrella. And it'd be one thing of like, that'd be a one-off thing. I was like, that was weird. But I mean, like, the guy gave me back my umbrella, so I'm not really going to complain. But this man, like, he calls him a stalker eventually. And I was like, no, that's appropriate.
But I brought him a bunch of chocolates to,
yeah, but he
to,
knows
to reward him
for
remembering
your
umbrella.
That's weird.
But yes, because he hasn't realized that these are disposable umbrellas. People just leave them for other people to pick up and use.
Hmm.
Yeah, just like get, like, yeah, they just got left outside. You can buy them for like, a fiver or less in a combini, and when it's raining out, you just like, can deposit them, just outside the shop or outside your place of work. You can leave them on the bus. It's often like a little thing on the bus or something like that. You can just kind of leave them inside there or in the station.
Well, yeah, friends. Obviously being an object that was loved so much for many years that he became alive. He doesn't really have the same point of view where he's talking to these disposable umbrellas and everything, trying to find them good homes.
Nobody wants an umbrella that's like where you gotta hold a big leg just to use it.
Well, or it's constant, like it's a huge buff dude, and it's constantly commenting on all the other really trendy umbrellas around.
That's one sexy umbrella over there.
But yeah, when Kinjiro's dad reveals that these are disposable umbrellas, then he starts to go berserk. But because Kinjiro has total control of the Chachanko, he just crushes him and there's no fight at all.
I thought it was the spirits in the Chachanko, like when he was like, now I'm going to finish you off, Kinjiro, with my special beam cannon or whatever the fuck he was going to shoot out of his eye. And it's like his ancestors goes like, no, you're not killing Kinjiro. That's not going to happen.
So one happens in the other. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, oh, people nowadays, they just think things can be replaced. The old man complaining from Kitaro's dad. That's for normal. Not everyone's like that. Because then they give him a decal sheet to decorate himself.
Yeah, you're one who runs the apartment blog.
Yes.
She's all right.
Yeah.
And what's the other thing? The thing she says it is, but it's clearly just a handle cover. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like his handle is a foot, so I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
It's a cute little cat sock. Hey, rat man, I'm cute now. Will I go out in the rain? No.
Yeah. I thought it was going to go more heavily into the environmental aspect.
That's what I thought as well. I thought, like, you know, yeah. then, as you say, it could be an old kind of kids these days don't spread their belongings, but it is like, yeah, well, no, we are feeding into a culture of waste and instant gratification with these things. There's probably like a behavioral should be checked, because like the other guy, you know, he was stalked and like that, but you know, he's rightfully angry at Bobby. He didn't learn nothing either.
And I mean, like, it does basically, I mean, like, I know he can't do anything but look, but it does basically have Daddy Eyeball look at the camera and say, it's like, well, people these days just have disposable, that's just the way of it. And I'm just like, okay, thanks, Daddy Eyeball, make me feel bad about shit. I
know. Thanks, David.
Periodically, they will take the mickey out of the fact that he does that every episode.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So that they're allowed to do it sincerely now and again, like here. Yeah, sure.
This is how things should be.
Back in my day. Yeah.
Yeah, but also I'm gonna guess the recycling culture and the fact that the umbrellas are getting reused by people. It's not like they're just being thrown in the bin. They're leaving them.
Yeah, you might even snap it too or anything. Like, it was in the recycling bin, so presumably they just get put back into rotation or something.
I suppose.
Cause that was the initial thing. He grabbed the wrong umbrella, like an identical fucking umbrella, from the bin, from the bucket outside the shop.
Yeah,
and it was just it doesn't matter. The person who comes out of the shop who did own that umbrella will just take his umbrella. It'll be fine.
Because otherwise you leave this show long enough, we'll get the episode of like the people who rush to think they're doing something right and end up doing something worse, like McDonald's and their paper straws, which can't be recycled, as opposed to their plastic ones, which they got rid of, which could have been.
Well, then more sea pollution is caused by like cutting nets rather than fucking straws.
I know.
And, you know, the straws are useful and people who need them, like the less able.
That's true as well.
There's dissolving the mush in the drink.
Hmm.
Yes, I'm going to guess for the nature of how the, it works as well as it did. I was kind of pleased it didn't go heavier.
Yeah, I like the fact that Caracassa, like, was, you know, initially tempted, is like, I don't want to fucking be a new trendy umbrella. I just want to admire them and that kind of shit. But eventually he's like, I need the power. Like, it was fun to have, like, a random yokai be the kind of center of the episode. And he's a fun, shouty, muscly umbrella man. So yes, he was good to follow around.
Yeah, because of the older, the classic yokai, I don't think he'd had his chance to shine yet, had he just been.
It's just been a prop. It's just been the umbrella. It's like
he is literally a prop, but yes, yeah.
Like Kidro carrying him around in the ending. That's the best he got. But now I can see him. Oh yeah, he does have like quite enormous arms. What did Brooker
do? He's a jacked umbrella. Yeah.
Next time,
I may just be. Yeah.
It is Yami the Yokai's great love project.
Oh, I guess Yami didn't escape hell after all.
Which appears to involve Kizaru making horsey faces and chasing women around.
Sounds good.
He's bringing all his knowledge he gained from playing the dating sim into the field, into real life, the three-dimensional world, you could call it.
Well, it works on giant snakes. I don't see why it wouldn't work.
But it appears to be like everybody starts doing it. It's like, what else have we got here? Yeah, I'm just rewriting this because it's... But, appears to be like a load of children trying to kiss a cardboard cutout of a woman.
Shenanigans is what it looks like, and yes, I'm all for
be,
it. Yeah.
It'll be screen cap central is what it's going to be.
A woman on
her knees declaring her love to a dog.
shit. Yeah. It seems like, I thoroughly enjoyed this one, but it does seem like another good one on the horizon.
Yes, probably gets the silly ones in before the two serious ones to wrap.
Oh no, I assume this is directly linked into the main plot.
Yes.
Better be.
Ray gets faced.
This is our deadly force general. A creepy old man who compels you to kiss things.
Once he has that power in his arms, no one will stop Ray.
Just turn his hand into a little face, you know, like you were gonna like go, it's all right, when it's with your hand, but like, oh yeah, baby. I can finally practice alone.
Oh god. Yeah. I nearly wish they'd take the piss out of their very serious shonen protagonist, but yeah, obviously his episodes turn out very differently.
Rightio, I've not forgotten anything this time, have I? No.
That's probably enough things.
Yeah, no, that's good.
About getting a few things. You. We're all caught up, though.
Rightio, that's everything done. We'll be back in next week with more. Let's go. Goodbye.